Hi there, this is Rob Hunter. I hope you enjoy your download of Sylvie's Suitcase. These MP3 downloads are released under a Creative Commons license. They're free. Copy the files as much as you want. Pass them around. All I ask is that you don't alter the file or sell it. If you like what you hear, tell your friends. And thanks for listening. Sylvie's Suitcase. A tale in four fits and a finale. Fit the first. Father Charles Coughlin set down the book he had been reading, Sylvie's Suitcase, a short story collection. The title piece was about a woman in search of her lost self, what she might have become if she had not married young. 16? Father Coughlin didn't think 16 was too young. The girls in high school were doing it like rabbits, giving it away. Or so he thought. So they told him in the confessional with an outbreak of giggles. They'd ever offered him any. In the story, the husband was an indifferently cruel man. His slights and abuses gave his wife a framework for her life. Without him, she was a cipher. Zero. Validation, Father Coughlin explained to the small collie dog that had been following him as he paced. That's all the woman wants. He gives her validation. Well, plus the bruises and the insults. Want some entertainment while we have our dinners? He asked the dog. There was some tail wagging. It clicked on the television, which had yet to be invented. The power is in you! From between the guardian gates of veneered mahogany, dead center in the television's tiny screen, a lacquered, pomaded TV preacher leered out from behind a fence of scan lines. Father Coughlin gave the TV a kick. The picture rolled over, the screen went dark, then popped back on, minus the lines, but with the sound full throttle. Well, I guess we missed something while he was away, huh? Father Coughlin said to the collie dog. Jesus is waiting, boomed the preacher. Not for the Pentecostals, said Father Coughlin. The telephone rang. Coming. A clearing of a throat, a hushed cough in the receiver. You are watching me. It was the preacher from the television. I reckon, said Father Coughlin. And could you pull down the volume? I'm not deaf, you know. You're not surprised, then? About? Me, knowing about you. Hello? Hello? There was a flash, a crackle, and the TV came back on. The preacher was standing in front of a cardboard spaceship covered with aluminum foil, holding a daffodil-style telephone and jiggling its hook. Oh, there you are, Father. A bubbling fog of dry ice vapor rose at his feet. You're on the phone. Well, you're watching me on the TV. You have been doubly blessed. TV has yet to be made known. Check in your trash bin. There'll be a something there for you, a token of our appreciation. It will be, there was a drum roll, a crate of fresh-picked pink grapefruit flown in direct from Florida in an airplane. This is a miracle. Sally Baggs in the 10th grade, said Father Coughlin. Sally is a decent girl, God-fearing. You know so much about me, then of course you know about Sally. Sally has performed fellatio while driving with her knees, so she says. Save the citrus. That is a miracle. The TV evangelist became fidgety and wiped his palms repeatedly on his trousers. You have been eavesdropping at my confessional. But I see you're flying to Mars, said Father Coughlin. I won't keep you. Cheerio. Father Coughlin crossed himself. The dry ice fog was carried off on the studio wind. She told you that? The man on television consulted a thick pad of scribbled notes. No. You are her confessor. You don't know this firsthand, albeit I'll grant the two are not mutually exclusive. Or have you tampered with Sally? Unlikely. In fact, Sally's here with me now. There was a snapping of fingers and some fumbling as the daffodil telephone was handed over. Hi, Father Coughlin, said a female voice. Why don't Catholics get to go on TV, Father? You mean radio. TV hasn't been invented yet, the radio priest corrected. Or the newsreels, Fox Movietone, the mightiest of all, Sacco and Vanzetti, Al Smith. The list went on. Newsreels of Mussolini, Al Capone, Bishop Fulton J. Sheen, John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Father Coughlin paused, uncertain about that last name. He's not yet either, that Kennedy, said his mother's voice. Alive or dead, born, one of those, figure it out for yourself. And don't slump, Charles. Straighten up. Ow! Whoa! His mother was being attacked. There was a clunk, as of a dropped receiver at Sally's end. The small collie dog coughed, a smoker's cough, not that of a dog about to toss up a hairball, and Father Coughlin felt his pants cuff rip as she bit him. Ow! Whoa! He hopped about on his unbitten leg, stifling a mild oath. The world took on unfamiliar sideways qualities as he fell to the floor.
Ah, yes.
Amelia Mahoney Coughlin, mother of Charles Edward Coughlin, a priest of Rome, turned to the television, slavered, growled, and leapt through matrices of subetheric broadcast waves to launch herself at Sally's throat.
Slut!
There was a crunch and a whimper.
Hey, she bit me,
cried Sally Baggs.
Amelia Mahoney Coughlin hissed, You can see my son any time. In church, bitch.
Sympathetic welts rose on Father Coughlin's face and neck as teeming letters, alphabetine insects, swarmed from the upcountry Ontario muskeg with the faces of newsmakers past, blood-sucking alphabet soup.
Mother, stop that. It's me, your son Charles.
Bow wow, said the small collie dog.
Yep. She bit her. Then you.
The TV preacher coughed and spat. His mother whispered into Father Coughlin's ear,
It's all right. I've had my shots. Besides, I'm dead. A lost angel, Charles. Jesus is waiting for you. Television hasn't been invented yet.
I know that. Tell Jesus he'll have to wait. You and Sally are enough for one day, said Father Coughlin.
He gingerly set the phone back in its cradle. Fit the second.
Blam, blam, blam.
Someone pounding on the door with the lid of a trash bin.
Blamity, blam, blam.
A counterpoint to the lightning rampaging across the sky. Charles Coughlin, priest of Rome, pulled back the curtain. Humidity steamed the glass, which Father Coughlin wiped with a sleeve. Through the streaks, a nondescript man was standing calmly in the downpour, waiting.
I need 10 daisies. I'm getting married this afternoon.
The speaker was youngish, his hair center-parted in the style of 100 years before. He spoke in half-inflected questions, almost apologetically. To her, he jerked his head toward the road where a motorcycle was parked. A young woman looked expectantly from the sidecar. Father Coughlin had, since coming to the Shrine of the Little Flower, nurtured a quite handsome, if he did say so himself, patch of daisies, gloriosas, black-eyed Susans, and echinacea of every race and flavor. Most of the daisies had begun life in the wild. A Guatemalan gardener, Enrique Levan, dogged the father's footsteps like a devoted hound.
Embarrassing, said Father Coughlin, but on the other hand, he does not bite like my mother, and I have a black thumb.
I am an avid gardener, but by proxy. Enrique carried a bucket and a shovel in the 1922 Ford truck that doubled as the shrine's shuttle coach during the retreat season.
That is quite thoughtful,
the flowers, said Father Charles E. Coughlin to Jesus, whom indeed it was. Although, if you were in love, I would suppose that a mutual concern over the feelings of one's intended would come with the territory.
If you're not going to have the simple civility to invite me in out of the rain, you could at least come out yourself and stand here with me. She'll be all right.
He again nodded to the young woman in the sidecar.
Sorry, puddles?
Enrique just finished the linoleum. Father Coughlin handed him a towel.
Here.
he said. For your hair? He noticed that but a few moments with the visitor camped on the rectory stoop, and he himself had begun speaking in half-inflected proto-questions. And why the 10? Damn, there I did it again. 10? 10, because 12 is showy and pretentious. The apostles? The young man standing in the rain squinted. Did what again? Not to bother, my friend. That shall remain my concern. You have 12 covered, His Majesty. And less than 10? What then? The young man fidgeted and wiped his feet. Prodigious clumps of mud came off and clung to the doormat. Whoa, Sagebrush, you got me there. Doesn't seem right, does it? All out of balance. After 6 years in seminary, you should recognize me. He looked past the priest, as though referencing himself in for a curl-up by the fire. It's me, Jesus, more or less. Less, said Father Coughlin. Definitely less. Come back tomorrow. He had stood his ground. It felt tangentially inhumane leaving his caller in the rain, but he'd showed him no more nor less consideration than the young man had shown the girl, his wife-to-be, in the motorcycle sidecar. That's all quite well for you to say, you there, Mr. Householder, all uppity and superior under your tight-shingled roofage. And while you're at it, Mr. High and Mighty, why not 6? Or a dozen? The man at the door tossed his head back like a retriever, some water dog shaking loose a halo of shimmering droplets. Savior? Jesus? That is you? The man turned. There was a circle of light surrounding his head and a smear of scarlet on his mouth. Yes, said the man. So? It's not tomorrow. I distinctly heard you say I should wait, that I'd be here today, if today was tomorrow. You said tomorrow. Yesterday. That's when you said it. Or it will be tomorrow, if we're granted but tomorrow. You may wait with me. Yesterday. Today. Anyway, keep it bent for Lent, Father. You know the drill. Wait. This is not about the flowers, then. It's about how many flowers. The woman, the girl, she's not getting married at all, is she? This is all about you and your numbers, with that poor woman left out standing in the rain. She'll develop a cough, too. Don't worry about her, Father. She's dead. Vilified. Sanctified, canonized, and set to gather dust on the shelf of history. Sit down, and let me tell you a tale of redemption and a failed saint, said Jesus. Okay? Sure. You are. Sure that I am the Savior, come again? Perhaps I may be the great beast, the Antichrist, for all you know. Hugh Laurie or Lenny Bruce, Jerry Seinfeld, conceivably. Think about it. On the other hand, I could be some streetwise bum who smokes too much and has attached himself to a sedulous member of the clergy, seeing a potential meal ticket behind the Roman collar. Potential. That's from the Latin for... Father Coughlin stepped forward, chin thrust out. Potestas. Virility. The seminal power that springs from the loins of the man, or the loins of the state. Conferred, it is. A powerful power. Being. Possum. From the verb to be, auctorius principis, a divine authority conferred upon a human by God. See, I know what Latin is. I'm a priest of the congregation of the See of St. Peter. Jesus met the Father, chin to chin. Well, I suppose having Latin is enough to ask of a Roman priest. Forget your seminary days, the pubescent fever dream, sinus congestion, and early waking to wet sheets. A pitiful snuffle and a muffled cough filtered toward them through sheets of rain. You're certain? Father Coughlin squinted toward the figure huddled at the end of the garden. For my sake, let's get inside, said Jesus. The men entered to where a kettle boiled, windows were steamed, and a jolly odor of roasted fowl and pastry baking filled the room. Nice digs. And what do I want of you? This is what you're thinking. I want you to find fulfillment, Father. That, and I shall be happy. I am fulfilled. Not yet. You have a rich parish, that is all. No redemption. Here is the second part of the story, The Failed Saint. Sit. Father Coughlin sat. Fit the Third. In the story, Sylvie turned to check under the skirt of the daybed. Sylvie kept her suitcase packed and at the ready. Her husband knew. Of course he knew. All those hours alone at home while she was away at her daytime employment as a bookkeeper. He would have found it. The suitcase was one of those brown overnighters, its outside printed in a pattern to simulate woven rattan. Saturday mornings, she would carry her suitcase to the bedroom and flip it open to sort and inventory her personal things. She sniffed for mustiness, shook out the wrinkles, and carefully laid the week-old lingerie in the clothes hamper. She then replaced it with a freshly laundered set. "You're packed," said the husband. He glared at Father Coughlin, who by rights he should not have known was listening. A wave and a hail from a parallel world, spinning past but unreachable, another dimension.
"Dr. Harmon," Sylvie said.
Yes, said Charles Coughlin to the book, Sylvie's suitcase.
"And?"
"Dr. Harmon says I have a malignancy," said Sylvie.
"A lump?"
"Malignancy is just a scary word. Better get a mammogram. That is where you have the lump. I've been reading ahead. Get a mammogram. It'll be nothing," the radio priest lied.
"Oh, thank you."
"You are packed," observed Father Coughlin, echoing the words of her husband. In the book, Sylvie started, stared at the ceiling, and crossed herself. Sylvie chose not to acknowledge her husband. She had learned to tune him out.
Sorry, said Father Coughlin.
The suitcase she would now be taking to the hospital. He was happy for her, in that she would have clean underwear, what with the cancer and all. Fit the Fourth. "I'm wet." They were back at the door. One in, one out.
"It's water, so walk on it," Father Coughlin replied.
"Wrong time. Not now. It would be showing off," said Jesus. The dog seemed to approve of this answer. She sat to worry a flea on her hindquarters, arched a leg, and fell over. The bouncing and barking had stopped. She lapped contentedly at her crotch.
"Amelia! Mother! Manners!" said the priest.
"See?" said the man in the rain.
"See what?"
The visitor thrust his nose in past the chain. "She knows the real thing, the dog. I'm it." There was another flash of lightning. "That's my father. He is ineluctable and inscrutable. You could be next."
"Or not?"
"Not to worry. We're safe. I'm just hanging out."
"You're Jesus?"
"Yeah, or just some harmless nut. Your call." Father Coughlin unlatched the chain. "I'm going for a bath towel. Stay put."
"Here?"
"There. You're wet already. What's a little more rain to Jesus?"
"Well, you've got a point there."
Father Coughlin pulled the man inside and thrust the towel in his face.
"How about your girlfriend? The Magdalene? Sally? That is Sally, isn't it?"
Jesus coughed up blood. Father Charles E. Coughlin offered a handkerchief. The two were now in the vestry stairwell of the Shrine Church of the Little Flower. "Ichor, sacred blood," said Jesus. "Should be green." "Strange." He coughed again. Globules glistened in the cloth, which was now sacred. "The hanky has been sanctified. You could rake in the big bucks with this puppy, Father." He brandished the holy hanky, shook out the creases, then wiped at a picture of the little flower which hung in the stairwell 6 steps up from the pier glass landing. There was some smearing.
"Mary is the flower in which God lies hidden."
Father Coughlin was uneasy ministering to the sick. They got so close. He made a vague movement over the handkerchief that could have been seen as a blessing.
"You possess the red-faced resonance of a booming good health," said Jesus.
Here the Savior broke into a choking fit. Father Coughlin pounded him on the back and wiped his forehead with the bloody handkerchief.
"Considering, better check on yourself in the mirror to see if you're here,"
And now, the finale.
A suitcase, any suitcase, spare nighties, dry socks, a threadbare house dress, in all sorts of weather, bonding the runaway to her baggage. Sylvie has found hers on the street, discarded, not unlike her. Sylvia keeps the books at Weller & Klein Precision Machine Work. The job is afternoons only, bookkeeping only. Klein never answers the phone himself. There is a regular 3 p.m. call that keeps him out of the way for a half hour at least. This is Sylvie's time. She walks, exploring the Precision Machine Work neighborhood, on foot. She might run, but she will never escape. The abusive husband, perhaps. She thinks of killing him on these walks of hers before returning to the drudgery of galvanized grommets per tear weight. If she murders him, the brute, more power to her, his face will appear in the mists of her midnight sweats and waking horrors. Sylvie slumped to the ground, sobbing. She was quickly covered by a cloud of pigeons that pecked at her and the fiberboard suitcase. It had come in simulated rattan with two web straps when it was new. It had been thrown out. Discarded. Something bad must have happened. She should never have touched it. There was one remaining strap when Sylvie pulled it out of the dumpster at Casey and Callahan, a specialty grocery she passed on her walk from the bus station. The strap flopped listlessly. She waved an arm at the no-see-ums that rose in a cloud attracted by her breath. She waited amazed by the dumpster and the aura of benign holiness emanating from the insect cloud. She must have stood there, the suitcase in her extended arms, for 30 minutes, an hour. She and the cloud of midges regarded one another, their minute hoverings, her silent breathing. She exploring her oneness with the cloud, the suitcase, the empty vessel which it was and which she had become. Sylvie picked up a charley horse in her right leg from lack of circulation, fell down, and broke the spell. If these had been moths, I would have run away, she thought. The no-see-um swarmed off on other business. The suitcase. With Klein on his afternoon call, there was still time. She opened it carefully. The skunk, a raccoon. You never knew. It was empty, save for the decaying roses smell of an old lady's underwear drawer. Not even a pair of socks. Sylvie, before she was married, worked mill girl hours with a 10-hour day and a 6.5-day week. She was most nights too tired for even dreams of romance. However, she lived in a dormitory with 36 other girls who took the bus home to their families on Christmas. She was not invited to tag along. No, and now I can't even shake hands, for I'm glued to my suitcase. It is the tape. Sylvie was thankful for Weller and Klein. Their grommets and headers. And tape. She had by now shaken off her insect attackers and crept close to her suitcase, shooing the birds away. Father Coughlin saw the tape that held the case together was colored purple. Why purple? He asked Jesus. Because that was all they had at the office. She pinched a roll and made her getaway. She's taken the wrong train. She's in the wrong town. Any town except where she comes from would be the right town. Sylvie now keeps the suitcase at work, lest her husband finds out. That would mean a broken rib or dislocated shoulder, for sure. Sylvie? Asked Father Coughlin. Because that is her name, said Jesus. I'm making this up. Work with me. Becoming stuck to one suitcase makes a denial of ownership difficult, if not impossible. Therefore, you are who you say you are. People only distance themselves from frustration and regret. Come, crucifixion has made me cold, but not dead. Thunder crashed, and a lightning bolt drilled into the ground down by the road. A piece of blackened earth and the smoking skeleton of an ornamental yew tree marked where the lightning had struck. But the woman sobbing said she was still alive. I suppose you think that's funny, said the man. Jesus. One of these Judgment Day chuckles of yours. Well, I am getting positively drenched, and it's all your fault.
My fault? Father Coughlin started to say.
No, not you, dummy. His.
The man on the doorstep shook a fist at the sky. My father.
My father? said a female voice, meaning the priest and not the heavenly presence. There was the odor of gasoline.
Hi, Sally.
The moon winked, then winked again as a gnat struggled under Father Coughlin's eyelid. In the middle distance, a night-hunting creature paused to listen. There was a whimper, then a howl. It scurried off.
Critic, said Jesus. I beg your pardon?
Father Coughlin winked back a tear for the moon. All he wanted was things back the way they were. The eyelid stung, smarted, then let fall a tear that carried away the corpse of the gnat.
This is Rob Hunter. I hope you enjoyed Sylvie's Suitcase, an elaboration on characters and themes suggested by the novel Midwife in the Tire Swing. Don't forget to click over to my site, www.onetinleg.com, and follow the links to the bookstore to download your own copy of The Midwife as soon as it becomes available in a digital format. And thanks for listening.